First I was a Catholic girl, loved the mass, I watched the swirl of smoke from candles burning, while Mary looked up yawning. I got confirmed and I confessed, I really felt that I was blessed. Plus I loved my uniform, so did the boy who lived next door. Something changed when I became of age, and all those things I thought were true, someday I'd break the big taboo. Oh, letting go, God, letting go, God.
Hello and welcome to Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. This is WOZO Radio 103.9 LP FM live in Knoxville, Tennessee. And I'm Larry Rhodes. And today we have live with us the Wombat. Say hello, Wombat.
The Wombat.
There he
What's
is.
What's up, everybody?
We have a band going on downstairs. They're tuning up now. They're going to be wailing, I'm sure, here in a little bit. And it's going to be a real problem. But we'll try to work it as best we can. I'm going to keep the microphone down when I'm not talking and bring it back.
That's awesome. I always want to have music in the background of the show anyway.
Yeah. We just let Ty do the show. And today we'll be talking about what theists and atheists have in common. Is that what you'd like to talk about today, Ty?
Why can't we all just get along? Yep, basically that.
Kumbaya. And there is an awful lot of things that we have in common. Basically, we were raised in the same society, and we should have many, many things in common, and we do, and we'll talk about that during the show. Right now, I'd like to say this is a live call-in radio show. We're talking about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, and the sciences. Conversely, we'll also talk about religion, religious faiths, gods, holy books, and superstition. And despite what Steve Martin would have you think, there are an awful lot of atheist songs, and you'll be hearing them right here in this program and generally on the station as they are in rotation. I'll also be talking about atheist and rationalist groups that exist here in Knoxville and how you can connect with them. Also, did you know that there's an atheist call-in television show here in Knoxville? Did you know that, Ty?
No, I have no idea. What is this about?
Yeah, it's an actual atheist call-in radio, TV show here in Knoxville. They take live call-ins on Tuesday. The show goes from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock, and we'll talk about how you can watch that a little bit later on in the program. Our call-in number is, and we've got it professionally done now, so hold on for the phone number to call in. Here we go.
865-333-5937. 865-333-5937.
And you can't ask for better than that. Whoever did that was really professional and well done. Oh, okay. So, Wombat, you want to lead off tonight's topic? How are we all together, theists and atheists alike?
So, you know, I hope that we can get more input on this, because obviously we may agree on a lot of points, but if we can get callers who have other beliefs to call in, maybe we can talk about how what we have in common more than what we have in difference, because I think we do have a lot of things in common. And that might be more welcoming topic for people to call in and have a conversation with us. So what I wanted to bring up was, you know, for the most part, we only disagree on one thing, theists and atheists. A theist is just a person who believes in a God, and an atheist is someone who doesn't believe in a God. But on every other matter, you know, we have a diverse range of agreements. We all believe in love. We all want to be happy. We all want good jobs. We all want good food. Pizza tastes great. Everyone loves pizza. But as far as the label atheist or theist goes, that's just a response to just one question. And there's a lot of other questions in life. And I think that if we look at what we have in common, we find we have substantially more things that we agree upon. Even, for example, a theist tends to be someone who believes in just one God, which means they don't believe in any of the other presented gods that are or suggested supposed gods in history. Neither do atheists. We just don't believe in just one more God. And when you really think about it that way, we actually have more in common than we may actually come to think. What do you think?
I think it's absolutely true. That's true, though. We have an awful lot in common. I wish it was simple as that they believed in a God and we don't. But, of course, they have all kinds of other beliefs as well as heaven and hell and soul and what happens to the soul when you die, the rules that you got to follow while you're here alive on earth, and darned if you better not follow them, because if you don't, God will punish us all, you know, that type of thing. There are an awful lot of things in common.
I can address that. Like, for example, an atheist may not worship a God or believe in a God, but they would have an understanding of what faith is. It's just a question of whether or not they use it would be the main difference between a theist and an atheist. For example, like, atheists are aware what faith is. We just don't find it as a useful tool to resolve truthful things, because you can basically have faith in anything. There's no position that you can't have that can't be supported by saying, well, I have faith that it's true. You know, like, black people can all play basketball. I have faith that that's a true thing. I can support that with faith. But it may not necessarily be true. But it's still something that an atheist can exercise, whereas a theist will tends to value faith substantially more than an atheist would. But they still both have faith. They can both still have faith in things. It's just the value is a question after the fact. But as far as, like, a belief in a God, that's the only main difference between the two. An atheist can still have, you know, fellowship, can still have faith, can still have concepts of things that are good and bad, evil, not evil, etc.
Even more than that, we have atheists and theists. I mean, we generally are honestly searching for the best truth, you know, the truth that we have in this world. They generally tend to go with a supernatural belief for truth, because it was handed down in a holy book for them, and they call that holy book truth. We don't. However, they prize truth and honesty. They prize trying to make a better world. The reason that they're preaching the gospel to you is that they are worried about your soul. Of course, we look at it, and we don't feel like we have a soul. We don't subscribe to that belief, but we do care about each other. We care about their well-being in this world, which is what we have in common with believers. It's just, you know, there's a line of demarcation where the beliefs don't cross, but we have an awful lot of beliefs in common on this side of that belief, and values, of course.
Sure. I hear you.
Yeah.
Keep going.
I ran out of steam. I think that we're all trying to make a better world, which is, you know, what we're working for, and we're working with the tools that we have. We're atheists. It's mutual belief and scientific discoveries and laws of nature and societal laws. We don't need a supernatural being telling us, you know, how we should act. We can work that out for ourselves.
I can also add one more thing, and then let's get into this list that you sent me, because I think it's pretty interesting. But you had said that it's important that believers and atheists alike both try to search for the truth. But I think there's also another component to that, whereas they're both interested in finding things that are not true. And I think atheists tend to have a slightly higher value on this, more so than a believer would, because I want to believe, as Matthew Henty would say, I want to believe in as many true things as possible and as few false things as possible. And in order for me to do that, I need to look for true things, and I also need to know what false things are. That way I can separate them. Because if I assume everything's true, if I just don't care about believing in as many true things as possible, I believe everything. But then I would obviously have some false things that I'd be compelled to believe as well. You know, that water tastes, or fire is something you can eat, or oil is something I can drink. Those would be false things, but if I didn't care about false things and only true things, I'd believe everything. But I also don't want to believe in things that are not true or things that are false. And if I only cared about not believing things that were false, I wouldn't believe in anything. But then that would mean I'd have to give up some true things that I wanted to believe in. So really, it needs to be a balance between the two. I'm trying to find the way in my life where I can believe in just as many true things as possible and as few false things as possible. And I think the search for the truth is also important, but also the search for things that are not true, so that we can distinguish the two, are equally valuable towards getting a more reliable understanding of the universe that we live in. And I believe that both theists and atheists find that a very valuable thing. Any comments?
No, I agree wholeheartedly. Of course, I have a problem with them just reading one book to find that truth when there's so much more out there. When the Scopes monkey trial was going on in Dayton, Tennessee, which is, you know, just 60 miles south of Knoxville, happened in 1925, a journalist, H.L. Mencken, came down from WGN in Chicago. And he actually wrote a book about his experiences, which I would recommend if I could remember the title, but I can't. But look up H.L. Mencken. He's a reporter for WGN in 1925. Came down to, and what he found here was an awful lot of fundamentalist Christians doing tent revivals and working against this evil of evolution. And he wrote a book about it. And in it, one of the most memorable passages to me was that he had talked to a woman who was a preacher in one of the tent revivals. And she asked him if he'd ever read the Bible. And he said, no, but I wonder if you've ever read any book other than the Bible. And she said,
sure,
no.
Yeah.
She said, no, because any truth that exists in the world would be in the Bible. And if it's not in the Bible, then it's not truth. It's therefore, if I read another book, it would take me away from the truth that I would find in the Bible.
Have you ever heard of nonfiction?
Sorry?
Has she ever heard of nonfiction?
Well,
she can go to a library and see miles of nonfiction books.
Well, I doubt she would consider that nonfiction if it wasn't represented in the Bible. So that was her argument. If it's true, it'd be in the Bible.
Sure, I'd happily take her to a nonfiction section of the library.
That's
a cheeky thing to say, but still, it's just to illustrate that, you know, if you're looking at one source that doesn't change, I have this example. I have a watch on one of my wrists, and what I did was I took a rubber band and I put it around my opposite wrist, and on that watch I wrote down the word N-O-W, now, like now as in like right now. I had functionally two watches on my hands. One watch was the rubber band that said now, and it told me what the time was, and it's always now. It never changes, and it's always correct, right?
You have to look at the other watch to see what the actual...
It's the one watch...
that is.
No, hold on.
Now.
I only need this one watch to tell me what the time is, and it's always right, and it's always true. Like, that's definitive.
Yeah.
But, on my other hand, I have a second watch that can tell me different times of the day, and it doesn't just say now, but, like, you know, I can set it ahead. I can make alarm clocks. But it also changes constantly. But it's also true. So, you know, if I only cared about one watch being true all the time that never changes and is the only one that I ever have, you know, that is a path that it's limited. Because at best, if someone asks me what time is it, and I said now, they may laugh a little bit, but they'll eventually want to have like a more deeper answer. So if they look at the other watches that are available, sometimes the watches are changed, sometimes the watches are updated, sometimes watches that have different designs to them, they can get a more complete understanding of how time works, how to tell time themselves, and that can be an overall beneficial thing. Now, here's the cool thing. You don't have to get rid of the other watch, the rubber band. You can use those two watches to compare against each other and find out, once you have an understanding of, you know, both how they work, which you like better or which gives you a more fulfilling answer. Because sometimes what we have is, at least from a theist perspective, is we have an answer, but we don't have an explanation. And there's no, an atheist, for example, hears the answer of, how was the universe created? Well, God made it. Well, for an atheist, that's no better than saying, why can't I go outside? Dad said so. Dad said not to. It's a the position where I want to understand what's happening, but I only get a candid or a strict answer that gives me no explanative power of how, or explanative power for how anything works. So if I said, like, hey, God made the universe, that's cool, but, like, if I want to have a better understanding of how that happened, maybe I can put myself on a path where I understand how demonstrative evidence works and how other forms of science explain how forms of matter interact with each other, and that gives me a better appreciation for what's going on. I can start that journey from the appreciation of, well, if God made it, let me at least understand how. But then along that path, you may realize that there's a difference between just having a short answer of God made it to actually these natural processes can make it pretty well. It's actually a pretty elaborate system. Whether there's a God or not, it's just a very beautiful thing that can stand alone objectively. I don't need to inject religion into this observation. It's just a really cool mechanism. That's generally the mental path that I walked along when I was trying to reconcile my faith. But generally, for the most part, yeah, like, if you really read one book, that's just one short answer. There's so many other books and so much information out there that can give you a richer understanding how the universe works around you. And I recommend you check them out. They're really great.
And I wonder why you didn't just write now on your left wrist. We save you rubber band and paper.
Speaking of things we can read, you sent me an article called Five Beliefs Atheists and Christians Have in Common. It's on www.whatchristianswanttoknow.com. Five Beliefs Atheists and Christians Have in Common, which is pretty much in key with the show. I'm reading through the list, and I think it's pretty interesting because it's clearly written by atheists. There's some small jabs to the atheist side.
Really?
But there is, I guess, there's some points that I'd like to bring up as we go through this list. How about it?
Well, go ahead. I printed it off and then promptly left it at home. So you have the list and I don't. What would you like to start with?
Cool. Let's start with his definitions of atheists and atheists.
Okay, before we get going, I'd like to say that Rye joined us. River, how are you?
Hello.
Hey. Say a little louder.
Rye is here!
Hey, sorry, a little bit late.
Okay, I can't hear you. Try it again.
Sorry, it's a little bit late. It's a bit echo chamber in here.
It is. It's bad. Okay, go ahead. We'll try to work with it.
Cool. Good to see you, man. Or good to hear from you. Anyway, the article starts with atheist and theist, a definition for both of them. And he basically just says, hey, if you put an A in front of a word, it just means the opposite of what that word means. So a theist is someone who believes in a God, and an atheist is someone who doesn't believe in a God. And I think that's a pretty fair statement so far. But in the process, and this is probably something I want to bring up last week, in the process of saying an atheist is someone who doesn't believe in God, he makes the assumption that atheists state that there is no God, which is two different things, because one is a statement on belief and the other one's a statement on knowledge.
Absolutely.
To say that no God exists is not necessarily the atheist. In fact, it's not the atheist position at all. Although some atheists do hold it, it's not what makes you an atheist. It's the same thing as saying, like, well, just because you can play basketball doesn't make you black, you know? Being black is a completely different thing than being able to play basketball. And there are some black people that can't play basketball at all. So there are some atheists that don't believe in a God. There are some atheists that just don't know if the God exists or not. And there are some atheists who wouldn't purport that God exists no matter what, because that's the definition of an atheist. But generally, just because you don't believe in a God doesn't mean that you are making the argument that no God exists. Just to summarize that. What do you guys think?
No, 10-4. I totally understand and I agree. The atheists don't make any claims. Atheism, per se, makes no claims. Atheism is simply a statement of belief. In other words, if I'm an atheist, I don't believe in God, period. I do not say there is no God. Now, if an atheist did come up and say that, then they're taking a Gnostic position on atheism, which is, you know, separate from atheism per se. Theism and atheism speak to belief. Gnosticism and agnosticism speak to proposed or claimed knowledge. So in the problem with making a claim is that if you make a claim, you have to then provide evidence to support that claim. Atheists don't do that. Theists do.
Sure. Liv, what do you think?
That makes sense. I mean, it lines up. It's knowing and not knowing, and assertions and not assertions. But they're always convoluted because connotations is a problem. It's basically just conferring there that it's assertion versus not assertions and knowledge versus not knowledge. And it's the connotations that are the problem of the two terms being one line with each other and divorced from each other.
What I would say is that I know people who might be listening in are like, what are all these labels and vocabulary? I consider them a bit more of an easier term. By saying, if someone asked me, hey, do you believe a God exists? I could just say, I'm not convinced yet. I'm waiting for better evidence than what's out currently. And if someone asked me, you know, what evidence are you looking for, I would just say, well, you know, if we're talking about a God that's, you know, potentially all-powerful and all-knowledgeable, they would know exactly what they would need to do to make me convinced of their existence. And they have not done that yet. So until they do, that's when I will believe in them, because I would obviously have no choice. Choice is a bad word. I would say I'd obviously would want to know that a God exists if they can convince me of it. All they'd have to do is just convince me of it. But until they do, it's not my problem. So that's my bottom line. But a theist would be someone who hears a God and says, yeah, I'm for it. And an atheist is someone who's like, don't really understand what this is all about yet. Maybe I just need some more information.
Yeah, that's true. That's true, and I agree. What was the second thing on your list?
Okay, so before we get into like the major list in the second half of the show, I wanted to tackle this slight jab that he gives to atheists in the second part of the definition. He basically says that atheist says that if there was a God, why is there evil? And the theist responds to the criticism or the argument of, you know, if there's evil, there must not be a God. It's by saying, if there's no God, there's still evil. Therefore, there is a God. Because even in a non-God world, there's still evil that exists. Which seems like a stretch to me. The whole concept of evil is a pretty heavy word. It's kind of loaded for me. I would say, yeah, there's bad things that happen. And yes, they can be absolutely hideous and horrendous. But if we're talking about evil and, like, good, we need to, like, have, like, an understanding that when I say those words, I have, like, a secular understanding of them, as in just bad things. Those are bad things. And if you ask me how do I know they're bad, I'm basing them as being bad based on how they affect society and a society that I want to participate in. And if it's an action that hurts that society or has a negative consequence on my welfare or causes harm unnecessarily, I wouldn't want to have that action take place. And that's what I'm defining as evil. Whereas for them, they're defining evil as something sanctioned by their higher power. And I think that mistranslation can be the root cause of why someone would say, hey, well, you know, if there's evil in the world and you say there's no God, obviously that can't be compatible. I can at least understand it if it was a mistranslation on that part. What do you guys think?
Well, I think that you made a mistake right there at the end, but you probably just didn't catch it. If there's evil in the world and you say there's no God, well, that's entirely compatible. There's no God, evil and good and whatever happens, you know, because it happens. It's just, you know, the natural state of things. However,
right.
The problem is if you say that there's a God and evil happens, that's fine too, because, you know, we had gods throughout history that were really bad dudes. Look at Loki, you know, in the Norse mythology. You say that your God is 100% good, and you say that he's omniscient and that he has omnipotence as well, and then there's evil in the world, then you got a problem, because that does not compute. There's a problem there.
One of the common basically apologetics that I hear is that I don't go along with it. What I hear often is that, well, God isn't omnibenevolent. He isn't omnipotent. He can't
create a rock so heavy he couldn't lift, he runs into logical fallacies. Therefore, he's maximally omnipotent and maximally...
Which is a change from their standard line, which they've been holding for centuries.
Right, and so when you go into the level of, well, free will is necessary to be maximally good, but then even if you grant that much, even if you grant that bit of dialogue and try to proceed from there, you still run into the problem, I think, of what happens all the time in between. I mean, what happens to anything that was happening all along, humanity, various stages of evolution. Christopher Hitchens, I think, puts it well that, for 200,000 years, all this violence is going on. And the gods or God is just sitting around saying, oh, well, what are you going to do? And they finally step in. I mean, that doesn't add up. So you still have run with that problem. There seems no convincing theodicy for that.
No, I agree. I have to turn my mic up so I can talk. I keep forgetting. But yes, that's true. I mean, how can you have an all-loving, all-powerful God and still have evil in the world? They even recognized that was a problem, 2,500 years ago? Epicurus.
Yeah, he was actually in the
riddle of Epicurus, huh?
Wasn't there some reference to that in the... it was a critique of the Bible, right? It was saying that, if omnipotent, if all good, if not these things, then therefore why God?
He can be two out of three. He can be all powerful and he can be omniscient, but he can't be all good if omnibenevolent, if there's evil in the world. And you can take two out of those three and have evil in the world, but you can't have all three and still have evil in the world.
Right. So that seems to be the constraint or the real obstacle to get over. But anyway, I want to get through this list. We're at the bottom of the hour. How about we do a quick little break and then we'll go through and tackle this?
Yeah. Sounds good to me. We'll be back in about 5 minutes. Let's see what we've got on the queue. Hold on. All right. When I brought up the phone jingle, it took away my other things that I had on there. But what we're going to do is we're going to play the phone jingle again. So in case you want to call in, you can do that. And I'll have music going after that. And also the message from the Rationalists of East Tennessee. So this is Free Thought Radio at WOZO 103.9 LP FM, live in Knoxville, Tennessee. And we'll be back in about 5 minutes. See you in a minute.
Do you find stories of talking snakes laughable? Do you prefer the scientific method over supernatural beliefs? Are you concerned about religious leaders and organizations imposing their values and rules on your body, your family, and the rest of our society? Well, take comfort in the fact that you're not alone. The Rationalists of East Tennessee meets weekly for fellowship and provides a forum for people who support skeptical thinking and rational discussion of these and other issues. To find out more information or to find out about our next meeting, visit us on the web at www.rationalist.org.
Their own imaginings in the sky. They want to usher in the messianic age. They don't mind if it's followed by nuclear age. They aren't so sure of their ability to outlive the utility of their body. But just remember there was the last thought in the brain of every suicide bomber in every hijack plane. Follow what God looks for. Who we are, we find, cannot survive without a mind. But you're so afraid to die, you're willing to sacrifice. Listen to it all with the knowledge that you only have one eye. Follow the God who's born after life. Which one do I try? Which one?
going to die. It's not a pleasant thought at all, but the way that I feel within is to treasure each moment with my surroundings and those I love. I spend my days trying to engage with the world, to learn as much about everything as I can, using the body of knowledge which is our shared heritage to further understand the historical and evolutionary context of man. The whole revelation in a higher place is the spin and the fate of those who chose.
This is Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. I'm Doubter 5. This is WOZO 103.9 LPFM here in Knoxville, Tennessee. With us today, we have the Wombat. Hello, Wombat.
The Wombat says hello.
Okay. You know, and we also have River. How are you, River?
Hello. I'm doing well, relatively. Yeah. Compensated.
Welcome back to the second half of the show. This is Free Thought Radio Hour. This is an atheist call-in radio show. However, we do have an atheist call-in TV show. It's called the Free Thought Forum, and you can see it every Tuesday between 5 o'clock and 6 o'clock on Comcast Channel 12 or Charter 192. You can also watch it streaming online at ctvknox.org. And it's every Tuesday at 5 o'clock. You can also find archive of some of the shows on YouTube, where a fan has saved some of them. Just go to YouTube and do a search for Free Thought Forum Knoxville. That's three words, as free thought is one word. If you're interested in getting involved with the show, just show up to one of the Ask meetups or RET meetups and talk to us about it. You could be our next TV co-host. First, we'd like to talk about the societies in Knoxville, the meetups in Knoxville. I mentioned the ASK meetup, and that would be the Atheist Society of Knoxville, founded in 2002. It now has about 660-something members. You can find it online at knoxvilleatheist.org. Everybody's welcome, and as long as you don't come to preach, proselytize, provoke, or punch, you're all welcome. Apologies to Matt Dillahunty. Then there's the Rationalists of East Tennessee. They meet at Pellissippi State Campus near Hardin Valley Road. They meet the first and third Sundays. They're even older than the Atheist Society of Knoxville. They've been around almost 20 years now. First and third Sundays in the Goins Administration Building Cafeteria Annex. Just follow the signs. Or if that's
not. But that doesn't mean there's just old people there. There's some young people there, too.
There are young people and old people there. More young people, I think, you could find at the Atheist Society of Knoxville. But go to rationalist.org if you'd like to find out more information about that. There's also the Secular Student Alliance, which has programs to give camaraderie, community, and free thinking. Community, I guess, to the high school and college students who would like to be involved in the free thought movement or just find secular companionship in the Bible Belt. Just go online and do a search for Secular Student Alliance and start your group anytime soon. Hopefully in the fall, I guess there's not much school left now. And see, before we continue, I'd also like to say that if you've got a community event that you would like to have a public announcement made on WOZO Radio, please just create an MP3 file to reflect that event. Then contact us via our website, WOZOradio.com, to arrange for it to be played in rotation. And I guess I should put in a plug for WOZO Radio. If you're listening to it in the car downtown or at home, you can still listen to it if you leave the city on WOZORadio.com, as we do stream as well. Just click on the Listen tab when you get there. And I guess that's about it for announcements. Ty, did you want to get into the second, I guess it was, topic that we were going to talk about, the similarities between atheists and theists?
Right. So the whole topic of the show is, hey, atheists and theists have things in common, and we found a website that we can use as talking points to support the show. It's a list of five things that atheists and Christians agree on, specifically Christians. It's on www.whatchristianswanttoknow.com. And the first thing is natural selection. Did you know natural selection is something atheists and many Christians, I know for a fact not all of them, but apparently the guy who wrote this article believes that atheists and Christians agree on. And they say that natural selection is the process in which animals can be born with certain traits that are advantageous in their environment. That leads to some species being able to pass on their genes more effectively than others. And that leads to other species that aren't necessarily as effective at staying alive and passing on their genes to eventually die out. We call this natural selection. So atheists believe in what a Christian would call microevolution and macroevolution, which is basically small changes in the same species. For example, a bird changing a different color of plumage of feathers or developing a longer beak to get into narrow holes in a wall or a tree trunk, whereas macroevolution refers to, I don't support these terms, but a macroevolution is one species evolving into an entirely new species. So, for example, a flightless bird evolving into a flying bird of some sort, maybe even a reptile, or a reptile eventually evolving into a bird of some sort. Okay, so the whole thing is, the distinction here is that they make Christians have two different terms for evolution, which is microevolution and macroevolution, whereas an atheist would say, well, you know, the mechanism is exactly the same between microevolution and macroevolution. Microevolution can occur on a short time frame, and then if you add more time, all those small changes add up. And what you end up with is an animal that can't procreate with what it originated with, or is some transitionary animal period that was in a further back period. Essentially, they can't make an offspring that can also have kids. And when you have that, when that occurs, congratulations, you made a new species of animal. We see it even with dogs. We see it in corn. We see it in bananas. These are things that we've done and engineered in our own time spans in a couple of generations, we can make new species. It's just the exact same thing that's happening in nature. New species are forming every, you know, century or so, or every couple of thousand years. We may have new animals just waiting to be discovered by man. What do you guys think?
Well, I think you're right on this. We agree on this topic, but you have some expertise on this topic yourself. Don't you have a biology background?
I have a biochemistry PhD.
Well, there you go.
But,
so,
yeah, but
you know where I'm speaking.
Well, I mean, listen, I'll tell you this. There's people in my own research group who don't believe in macroevolution, or what they refer to as macroevolution, which is a shame because, you know, we work side by side with each other. We can see these things even with the bacteria we ferment in the lab. But it's ultimately a cultural limit that's keeping them from admitting something that they already know to be true. It's not that they're lying. It's just that when they see it, when they see, like, evolution, at least in the speciation of, even, for example, like, Larry and River, you both have parents who had you, but you don't look exactly like your parents. And you're going to have kids, or for Larry's case, you already have kids, and the kids don't look like you, and the kids don't look exactly like you, and the kids don't look exactly like your parents. Every generation changes slightly because we take up some genes and we don't take up some at the cost of taking up other genes. And because of that, we have a new person that has a new genetic makeup
and we send them out into nature, and they are off competing with other people to pass on their genes.
Yeah.
But every new change is small. It's very, very small. Sometimes he has red hair, now it's blue, or now it's brown, and then you can't get the red hair back again. Sometimes a change occurs where you're more likely to not get a disease, or you're more likely to live like a couple of years longer. At a certain point, your offspring will be unable to have progeny with any of the people who are your ancestors, for example, if you had a time machine and they go back. Mm-hmm. And that's because, and that occurs. That's a new species of human being. We may not necessarily call it a human being, mm-hmm. but that is a new species that can no longer make a fertile child with your ancestors. And that is a path we're on right now. So when you really think about it, every single child you see, every single adult you see walking around the world, every single picture of an ancestor is a transitionary animal along that path towards making a new species of human. And we're all a part of that right now.
Right. It's funny to me that the guy who wrote this article was a Christian. He was saying that these are things that we have in common. And in every single one of them, he took a jab at the atheists. He said, we believe in natural selection. We both do, you know. But he says the atheists have this glaring hole in the transitional fossils that they can't come up with any fossils that are transitional, you know, between one species and another. And that, of course, is a red herring. Every single fossil is a transitional fossil. Every single species is a transitional species. The concept itself, you know, we don't have a missing link between man and monkey. That was a concept that was active back during the 50s and 60s. We have found many, many intermediate fossils between then and now. And every time we find one and we put it between two skulls and say, here's your intermediate, you know, this is the one between these two, they say, no, you have two gaps now. We need two fossils.
That is five.
So, yeah.
I'm getting riled up. Did you just say transitional between a monkey and a man? Because I have an argument against that.
Yeah.
I'd say an ape to a higher primate to a human being, we have the trail for that, sure.
Yeah.
But a monkey and a human being are two completely different things. They split on that evolutionary line like a Y, and those brands, but they have a common ancestor. That's what's cool.
Yeah.
We do have a common ancestor with monkeys.
Which is neither a monkey or a human.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
But it has traits of both. And
probably.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably very handsome.
I wouldn't know about that.
Okay.
So let's
get to the next one. The next one is, there are such things as... let me do this one. There is such a thing as the beginning point for the universe.
Yeah.
So the writer who wrote this said that both Christians and atheists believe that the universe has a finite and singular beginning point in the universe. And some may call it the Big Bang. But the atheist position, or at least I would say the scientific position, is that's just the best answer we have right now. If we find like there's 10 Big Bangs that existed in several different multiverses or something like that, if we could demonstrate that, that's where our belief would be. Right now, the Big Bang is just a model that we have that gives us the most rational explanation for how the universe works with the limited information that we have to understand it right now. When we get better information, that model may completely change. It may fundamentally change. But for right now, it's really useful because it seems to be very good at not only telling us how the universe works, but predicting things about how our universe looks and how it may look in the future. And that's why it's very useful. Will it be completely undone? Possibly. You know, it's totally optional. But if a Christian says that they also believe in a singular point of the universe and that they also are supporting Big Bang Theory, they have to understand that science and the atheist perspective is that we're waiting on evidence to come in and we will build models to reflect that. But we don't have a single answer or conclusion in our mind ahead of time.
Right. No, I agree. Did you have anything to say on that, Ruth?
Right. I just wanted to add there, it's interesting, I think, how there seems to be this massive compartmentalizing going on, that there will be some things that are, and this is nothing new, but there will be things that are accepted in modern technology and the sciences and all we've come so far. But everything else is, well, you know, that's just dispensationalism, you know. We're learning more things about God's nature. And rather than just pointing out, this is it, this is that, and that is this, and there are problems when you read, you know, holy scriptures, and if you have to spin everything to make everything make a modicum of sense, that seems problematic to a design which there wouldn't be any mystery. I mean, as we go along, more and more people are escaping religiosity. I mean, it grows in spikes, but more and more people are escaping religiosity. And if it gets to the point, which seems the case, that more and more people are aware, they're more critically minded, they're more educated, they know more about things building upon the shoulders of giants we've come up on so far and so far, it comes down to a point where just hypothetically, some gods or gods has this model where just very, very, very few people actually cracked the code. What does that say about such a creator or creators, that it gets down to where a single grain of sand among the ocean is a worthy grain of sand? I mean, what does that say about it? It's kind of an
can you address what he's already talked about, what he's already brought up?
Sure. So if I could just make a quick comment, just before we move on, I think that it's kind of telling where science will come up with an answer for something, and then if it's so demonstrable or so credible that it sounds, you know, widely accepted, religions left and right, not just Christianity, will tend to adopt what Christian or science finds in order to gain credibility as a secondary party. It's like, oh, is that what science is saying? Is that credible? Sure, we're saying that too. Now we're credible too. And it's kind of an unfortunate thing because science doesn't purport any of the supernatural claims that a religion also has as part of like their like bucket of claims that they make. But it's also going to change. Just like how our understanding of the solar system works, you know, our understanding of like how light works or how evolution may be understood, you know, 40 years from now. Darwinism, for example, natural selection as explained by Darwin, has been shown through science to not be the complete and best answer for how evolution actually works. Sometimes animals can change very quickly over very short periods of time, and our understanding of the universe can change dramatically too. And because of that, our final answer may change as we learn more stuff. And I hope that at least Christianity or any kind of theist philosophy is willing to appreciate that changing an answer is a good thing when it comes to getting more evidence, rather than just having one consistent answer that you try to find reasons to hold as more evidence comes in.
Well, sure.
Anyway.
Sure. The thing about it is, science changes, but it gets more and more accurate. It gets better and better evidence. The question I would ask the theists are, would you not change your mind if you got better at evidence? You know, if the old evidence was good for the model that you were building, you got new evidence and you change your model, would you not do that? I mean, it's just common sense. Also, it seems to me like the religious take their answers and search for evidence that support their answers. They're working backwards. They're not really querying the universe. They're just searching among the bins that scientists uproot of the evidence that they uproot from nature, and then fitting them like a puzzle, or trying to fit them into the puzzle of their religion.
Right. I agree.
Well, also, after that, imagine, and it kind of goes back to things that are seeking answers, and existential is the word I was looking for. That's the word I was looking for. I just came to leave. But so as far as looking for something and trying to prove something out, a friend of mine says, you know, he quotes the Bible as, you know, test me, don't take my word for it, test me, and, you know, prove it out through the scriptures and so on and so on. It's very circular, but the point being, hypothetically, what if 2,000 years ago someone were to write down in a book a whole bunch of claims, I'm immortal, I can fly, basically Chuck Norris play-ups. And if that was written so long ago, what would be the difference in something like that being possibly taken by others as, well, look at this guy, he made the model of what would eventually be Chuck Norris or something. In that case, what if all those books were to, Ricky Gervais mentioned this. I've heard it elsewhere before. What would happen if all religious texts were to be eradicated from print, and all we had is our minds and memory to go off of? In 100 years, do you think signs would be reproduced more accurately of observation and falsifiable tests? Or do you think the exact religious text will be reproduced over again? And I think it's less so.
Okay. So how about we go through the last 2 points so I can combine them? And sure. The very, very last point is there's good people on both sides, and I think that's true. But the other 2 points I think are kind of more juicier. And that's that both atheists and Christians believe that there's an objective truth. And I think if you know what the logical absolutes are, or seeing oppressors and that, you would find that atheists do agree that there are some things that are absolutely true. Christians also do as well. But those are the same things. That's the debate for later.
That's true.
But on the question of whether an objective truth does exist, I think both of these guys would be in kind with each other. But they also agree that there's objective morals, and I found that the most interesting of the points that are on this list. What do you guys think about an objective morality? Does it exist, does it not exist?
You mean across all societies?
Well, is there such a thing as an objective morality?
Well, I think that we have some things that are objective, or at least agreed upon through all societies, or you couldn't have societies. We can't.
Okay.
We have to agree that we can't kill each other. If we balance the based a society on that, the society would fall apart pretty quickly. And the other ones are you can't steal their property. You can't. You shouldn't lie or take the wife of your friend or neighbor without their consent. That type of thing. We have to have some things to build a society on. If you don't have them, you won't have the society. So I guess, yes, you would have to say there are some things that are objective morality, so we would agree on that.
Got it. I think you phrased it perfectly. You basically said, because we have values that we hold dear as a society, that being our welfare, our property, etc., then we make a list of rules that objectively lead to the support of our community. And based on that, that's objectively true. That what we value in our society could be subjective, but the rules that we use to make our society good can be objectively true. And that is what I agree as an objective morality. It's like, we made these rules so that we all will live longer and not end up eating each other. And if we follow these rules objectively, we will not eat each other and we'll have a good time in society.
Yeah, not eating each other, that's a good rule too, yeah.
But a Christian has an objective moral that is basically given to them by a God that is assumed to be morally good. What do you think about that?
Well, do we have any more points? We're about 4 minutes from the end of the show.
That's the last point.
Giving my view on it, saying that we have to have some certain moral objectives. Rick, what about you?
Really succinctly, we all can experience pain and we can all suffer to some degree. We have that in common, so let's use that to build our societies and build our rules. That seems the most objective thing to be observed and experienced. When people object things about, well, what if, and what, on the supernatural realm, you're straying away from what we can know. And, it's just making things worse, in my opinion.
Okay, final words. Ty or Wombat, you go first.
There's good people on both sides. Just want to reiterate that point. It's also on this list. We both know good Christians, bad Christians, good atheists, bad atheists. And I think when we realize that, we're all not that much further away from being more or less way more in common than we are different.
Works for me. Ty? Riv?
Do good and think critically.
And that gets down to me. This is Daughter 5. And remember, everybody's going to somebody else's hell. Be here next week. Where this is the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. I'm Larry Rhodes, Daughter 5. We have the Wombat. Say bye, Wombat.
The Wombat!
And Wombat and River.
Ah.
And we're going to leave you with Holly Near's I Ain't Afraid. And we'll see you next week.
WOZOLP, Knoxville.